welcome our senior pastor, Pastor Matt, to the stage.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. Fantastic, thank you. But you may be seated, and it's great. How exciting is it that we can actually increase our numbers from next week? I don't know about you, but we've been hanging out, praying for that, believing for that, and so it's really awesome. So if you're watching online, you're thinking there's no space for you, we have space for you, all right? Not only have space for you, we have space for your friends as well, and we'd love to just see the place packed out from next Sunday, and then of course for a Christmas celebration, it's going to be awesome, and so it's great. So I'm speaking about, on our series, Wisdom to Live By, which is a journey through the book of James. And I hope you've been enjoying the series. Have you been enjoying the series in the book of James? Yeah, I mean, it's been punchy, it's been hard-hitting, but it's been so good. Because, you know, when you go through a book, you can't skirt around the passages you don't like. Isn't it funny how sometimes you read the Bible that way? You're like, we get to a point, and then you get to a point, oh, I don't like that, skip over, move to the next bit. Oh, yeah, that's a lot better, I'll just read that bit, move on. Oh, that bit, oh, no, that's not so nice. But actually preaching through this, we haven't been able to do that. You just kind of got to really get to grips with what is James trying to say. And James is essentially writing to a church where there have been a lot of displaced Christians because of persecution. And he writes essentially to give them this message. He says, I want you to live what you say you believe. Yeah. He says, I want to ensure that what you're saying you believe and how you actually live actually line up. I want you to shut up and put up. That's a colloquial way of saying the same thing. But let's be those that would actually live it out, no matter what we may be facing. Let's make sure that we're not succumbing to the world's way of dealing with things, the world's wisdom, but let's make sure we are living by God's wisdom and dealing with things His way. And so I've entitled my message this morning, An Eternal Perspective. And we're going to pick it up in James chapter 5, and then we're going to jump back to chapter 4 and find ourselves land again in chapter 5. But we're going to pick it up in James 5 verse 7. And if you don't know, if you go to your app, you look under sermon notes, you'll actually be able to see a lot of these points already in there, scriptures already in there. You can actually go into the app and you can actually make your own notes and those kind of things and follow along. So if you're online, you can do that too. And so check that out. It's a very cool thing. But we're going to read from verse 7 of James chapter 5. It says, be patient then. I'm going to stop right there. Some of you need to hear that. Some of you are not very patient. Some of you are not very good at this patience thing. Right there, you just need to hear those two words. Be patient. Whatever it is that you've been trusting, whatever you're impatient about right now, be patient. Then, brothers and sisters, until the Lord's coming. It doesn't even say be patient until next week. It says be patient until He comes again. That's a long time. See how the farmer waits for the land to yield its valuable crop, patiently waiting for the autumn and spring rains? You too, be patient and stand firm, because the Lord's coming is near. Don't grumble against one another, hello. Don't grumble against one another, hello. Don't grumble against one another, in case you didn't hear it the first two times, brothers and sisters, or you will be judged. Whoa. Oh, but it's just a little bit of goss. Oh, it's just a little bit of, no, don't do that kind of stuff. God's word's clear. He said, you engage in that kind of stuff. He says, guess what? You will be judged for what it is that you're engaging in. And he goes on to say this, says the judge is standing at the door. You know, James is essentially saying, what he's saying in this passage and the whole thrust of my message today is that we've got to live with eternity in mind. Because when you do, it'll help you face whatever it is that you may be going through. Whatever it is, and even if you're not going through stuff, you will go through stuff at some point. Why? How do I know that? Because the Bible tells us, Jesus himself said, in this world you will have troubles. And so that's a guarantee. But when you have an eternity perspective, it's that which puts hope in your heart. It's that which enables you to rise above the situation and not just live as a victim, but live the victorious life that Jesus purchased for us on the cross. That's what he wants you and I to live in. He wants us to live victorious, not simply as victims. And he uses this illustration of a farmer planting seed. And it's a great illustration because it's basically talking about even though when they plant the seed, they can't see what's going on beneath the ground. They put seed in the ground, they water it, they tend to it, but they see nothing. It's just they keep on doing the same thing day after day, month after month, and they see nothing. It looks like nothing's going on. But they know that there is something going on. There's actually something going on below the ground. Something that they cannot see. And ultimately, there'll come a day when it bursts forth, and then they'll be able to reap a harvest from that crop. And James says, hey, that's how we need to live. We need to live with that kind of perspective, because farmers fix their eyes on the long game. No farmer will plant a seed today and expect a harvest tomorrow. You don't do that kind of thing. They understand that actually you plant a seed today and their eyes are on the long game. And it's that that enables them to get up every day and do the things that they have to do every day, even though they're not seeing anything happen in that place where they've actually planted that seed. And so they get up really early and they do all the things they have to do, and they fertilize and they tend and they water and they do all the things, whether it's rain, hail, or whatever it may be, sun. They do the same thing because they've got their eyes on the long game. And they trust the process, and they trust the promise. You see, they trust the process and they trust the promise. And likewise, God has a promise and he has a process. And let's not live life with this kind of McDonald's mentality. Can't say, I deposited today, I expect it tomorrow. God doesn't always work that way. He wants us to live with the eyes of eternity. He wants us to have our eyes on the long game and actually understand, just like the farmers, when you sow the seed, you know that you can trust the promise and you can trust the process. Why? Because we can trust him. And you can trust him and you can trust his processes and you can trust his promises. And so the eternal, James is saying, is what helps us make sense of the present. Charles Spurgeon, a great preacher of old, says this. It says, unless we purposely live with a view to the next world, we cannot make much out of our present existence. Your present existence is given context when you view it through the eyes of eternity. James 5, that's why it says in James 5, verse 8, be patient and stand firm, because the Lord's coming is near. You know, the early church that James is writing to actually had an expectancy that the coming of the Lord, the coming of Jesus, would possibly even happen in their generation. There are exactly 318 references to the return of Jesus in the 216 chapters of the New Testament. That's how much the early church believed that the coming of Jesus was something that was going to happen in their time. They lived with the sense of, like, he's coming. He's coming soon. And in fact, it wasn't just James who believed that, but writers of the Bible, like Peter and John and Paul, they believe the same things. Listen to what it says in 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 7. It says, the end of all things is near. Therefore be alert and of sober mind. Why? So that you may pray. We don't just pray for some religious reason. We pray because we want to have an eternal perspective. We want to pray because we want to connect with this God of eternity and understand his heart, his will, his everything that he's on about, his plan. Do you know that life is his story? It's history. His story. And he wants us to live with that perspective. Romans 13, verse 11 says this. So this is Paul writing, and he says, and do this understanding the present time. The hour has already come for you to wake up from your slumber, because our salvation is nearer now than when we first believed. The night is nearly over. The day is almost here. So let us put aside the deeds of darkness and put on the armor of light. The Bible's clear. No person knows the hour or the time in which Jesus will return. But there was still a sense that these early believers still had a sense of urgency, still had a sense that Jesus is coming soon. He's coming soon. And so they live with that. And that's what James reminds them. Said, guys, don't just live according to the here and now. Don't just live with your eyes fixed on whatever is going on in your world right now. He says, lift your head and begin to look through the eyes of eternity. Because when you look through the eyes of eternity, it'll help you make sense of your here and now. You know, the word that James actually uses for the word near actually means in the Greek to be at hand. So what that means to me is that the return of Jesus is closer than you think it is. So whenever you think Jesus may be coming, it's closer than you think it is. And so how's that impacting your life? How are you living with that sense of understanding when you're under that? And we need to live with a sense of urgency of eternity and lift our eyes and understand we're part of this bigger picture. We're part of this bigger story that is underlying things. And James writes to this and says, guys, I know you're doing it tough, but I want you to fix your eyes on eternity. I want you to understand that Jesus is coming again soon, and his return is nearer than you think. And he says, because of that, you can stand firm. You can stand firm. You can be patient, because he's coming again. C.S. Lewis, the great writer, said this. He said, if you read history, you will find that the Christians who did the most for the present world were just those who sought the most for the next world. The apostles themselves who set on foot the conversion of the Roman Empire, the great men who built up the Middle Ages, the English evangelicals who abolished the slave trade, all left their mark on earth precisely because their minds were occupied with heaven. It is since Christians have largely ceased to think of the other world that they have become so effective in this world. Aim at heaven and you'll get earth thrown in. Aim at earth and you will get neither. The question is, how are we living? Are we living just in the here and now and the everyday and the earth as I know it? Or am I actually living with an eternal perspective, understanding I'm part of a bigger thing? And so what does James point to here in the scriptures in chapter 4 and verse 5 of this text? What does he actually point to that actually shows us some of these essential ingredients for us to live with an eternal perspective? And the first one is simply this, is that our life is brief. Our life is brief. Your life is brief. He says this in James chapter 4, verse 13. He says, now listen. I was saying to the 9 a.m. congregation, some of you pay us with South African heritage out because we say things like, now listen. And you say, you South Africans, how can you say that? It's in the Bible. It's there. It's evidence. I've got it. I've got proof. Now listen. He says, now listen, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go to this city or that city, spend a year there, carry on business and make money. Why you do not even know what will happen tomorrow? What is your life? I want you to underline that if you've got your physical Bible. Underline that, highlight it. What is your life? It's a great question. You're a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. That doesn't hit home at you and kind of put things in perspective. I don't know what, but James is trying to protect themselves from themselves. And when he says, now listen, he's not just trying to be all domineering and controlling of them. He's trying to say, guys, I really need you to hear this because this is of eternal value. What I'm sharing with you is that important that you really need to hear what I'm trying to say. You really need to listen. Don't just listen with your ears. Listen with your spirit. Listen, actually understand that actually I'm calling you to live because your life is just brief on this earth. But there's an eternal thing that you're part of as well. And when you fix your eyes on the bigger thing, it helps put the present day into context. Their attitude was a kind of we will attitude, one of self-sufficiency. They weren't living heavenly minded. Their thing was, I will do this, I will do that, I won't do this, I won't do that. I'll determine where I go, I'll determine where I don't go, I'll determine how long I go, and I'll determine when I return. And isn't it amazing how often we can find ourselves trapped into that very line of thinking? No one can tell me what to do. I will decide. And James is talking to that very thinking, that very attitude, and saying, guys, that is not good. That is not living with an eternity perspective. That is living just in the here and the now. And Paul, the Apostle Paul, he actually refers to it in 1 Corinthians. He refers to it as the wisdom of this age, where it actually puts me at the center of it. And so it's about what I want, what I feel, what I think I need right now, what makes me feel good, what, you know, that's what I'm primarily concerned about. But actually Paul says, no, we're not meant to live according to the wisdom of this age. He says we are meant to have the mind of Christ. And the mind of Christ is the mind that has an eternal perspective and understands that our days on this earth are just brief. Our days on this earth are but brief. He says, James says, we don't even understand what will happen tomorrow. And yet some of us are making decisions like we know it all. I know what's going to happen. I know what the outcome's going to be. I know this. I know that. I know that. I'm going to decide. Hey, James says, we don't even know what's going to happen tomorrow. Why are we living that way? God knows. He has a plan. He has a purpose. He has a story that he's working out. We're part of a bigger narrative. And James asks this question, what is your life? What is your life? It's a huge question. But ultimately, he's saying to me and to you, he's saying, Matt, who's in charge? Who's in charge? Who's making the calls? Whose drum beat are you marching to, Matt? Are you marching to your own or are you marching to mine? Or what is it? What are you living for and who are you living for? And he uses this analogy of mist. He says our lives are just like mist. And at the beginning of this year, when we were still allowed to travel pre all the restrictions, we went up to Port Macquarie to go minister in the church up there. Friends of ours lead a church, and we went to go minister there. And one day we had an opportunity to go up to a mountain that overlooks the area. And we found ourselves right at the viewing point on the top, was actually above the cloud level. And as we went out up there, it was this amazing phenomenon that was taking place, because the mist was just kind of rolling in. And it would just envelop you, and then it would just disappear in the next moment. And then it would roll in again, and then it would just, you'd be covered. You couldn't see your hand in front of your face, and the next minute it was gone. And no matter how much I stood on that mountain and said, "Mist, I will control you." Guess what? It decided what it was going to do. It was there one moment, it was gone the next. I couldn't control it no matter how much. And James says our lives are like a mist. We're not meant to control them. They're here one moment, they're gone the next, but we're part of a bigger narrative, a bigger story. And in the context of eternity, we need to understand that's how you need to see it. Yeah. Let me illustrate it another way. I finally found some use for the whole, all the stockpile of toilet paper that I now have in my house. My family paid me out massively when I came home with 8 of these rolls, because they were selling them at the local servo. And I thought, I need to buy some toilet paper, until I found out that actually that doesn't fit on a toilet roll holder. Anyway, so we haven't used them, but they've been sitting in my house. And I just want to illustrate, because here, this represents your life, my life. Just a brief portion. And in the context of eternity, I want you to think about it, because as I begin to unroll this thing, I could just go and go and go. I've got a whole roll here. And go and go. I can go all the way back. I can just keep on going and going and going. And I can just keep on going and going and going, because the reality is that our lives are just a moment. I haven't even got even halfway through this. In the context of eternity, and yet we live like that's the only thing that matters. How nonsensical is that? God doesn't want you just to live with that sense of that's the only thing that matters. He wants you to understand that. Who would like some toilet paper? Sophia, you may have toilet paper because you're a poor student. You may have that. There you go. Be blessed. A simple illustration, but I think a powerful one, because it tells us that actually, I remember a number of years ago, Jill and myself had the opportunity to sit next to the bed of Gurley and Geraldine. They're a beautiful family in our church. Their mom, Julia, just such a precious lady. I'm sure many of you would remember her. But we spent, in her last days, we had the privilege of sitting next to her bed and spending time with her as she graduated to heaven. And you know, when someone has caught a glimpse of heaven, like she had, it didn't matter what was happening to her body. Her body was racked with cancer, and it was just didn't matter what was actually happening, and her body was just slowly shutting down. But there was a joy in her eye, and there was a joy in her spirit that touched and blessed whoever it was that spent time with her, even when she was lying in a hospice about to graduate to heaven. And I remember the one time, the last time we saw her, Jill and myself drove out of the car park, and we sat in the car park. And on that, as we drove out, we both said to one another, after having spent some moments with her, we just said, we hope we can live that way too. We want to live with that eternal perspective, not just in the here and now. Today's just a mist. Martin Luther said it this way: live as though Christ died yesterday, rose today, and is returning tomorrow. So here's my question to you. What would you do differently if you knew that you only had 30 days to live? That's quite a punchy question. It's a great question, though. What would you do differently? How would you live differently? What would you prioritize and not prioritize if you knew that you only had 30 days to live? My second point is this: our purpose is God's will. How do we live with an eternal perspective? We need to understand that our purpose is God's will. Our purpose is God's plan, not our plan. James 4 verse 15 says it this way: instead, you ought to say, if it is the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that. As it is, you boast in your arrogant schemes. All such boasting is evil. If anyone then knows the good they ought to do and doesn't do it, it is sin for them. Don't you love James? He just punches hard, man. He just said, guys, if you know what you should be doing and you're not doing it, that's called sin. I'm just like, oh, that hurts. But that's the Bible. That's James saying, this is how you live with an eternity perspective. Understand that your purpose is God's will. Your purpose is God's plan, not just to do what you think you need to do. We're created by God and for God and to serve His will. And He gave us, here's the thing, people say, yeah, but I got free will. Yes, you do. But you know why God gave you free will? So that you could choose His will. God gave you free will so that you could choose His will. That's why because he doesn't force anything upon you. He says, I want you to choose me. I want you to choose my plan, my purposes. I want you to choose to worship me. I want you to choose to surrender to me. He says, that's why He gave us free will, to choose Him. You know, and so how are we living? Instead of control, we should be seeking His will. God has a plan and it's good. And I want to say to you, this world's not out of control. God is in control. COVID hasn't kind of thrown it all up in the air and it's all crazy and all that kind of thing. No, no, God's still in control. He has a plan for this world. He has a plan for your life and His plan is good. Why would we waste our time doing anything else but His will? Why would we waste our time doing anything else but His plan? Mark Twain said this, the two most important days in your life are the day you were born and the day that you found out why. God has a plan for your life. And so do you know if you're living for God's purpose in your life? As a local church, part of our vision is to help you find that, discover that. And we would love to journey with you and help you discover what God's plan for your life is because He has a plan. Thirdly, if we're going to live with an eternal perspective, we need to understand that our possessions are not our own. In James chapter 5, verse 1, it says this, now listen, you rich people. He could be talking to Canberra because, let's be honest, we are up there in terms of wealth, in terms of world. You look around the world, we are up there. You may not feel like it, but I can assure you, you are. It says, now listen, you rich people. Weep and wail because of the misery that's coming on you. Your wealth has rotted. And moths have eaten your clothes, your gold and silver corroded. Their corrosion will testify against you and eat your flesh like fire. Oh my word. You have hoarded wealth in the last days. Look, the wages you failed to pay, the workers who mowed the fields are crying out against you. The cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord Almighty. You've lived on earth in luxury and self-indulgence. You've fattened yourselves in the day of slaughter. You have condemned and murdered the innocent one who is not opposing you. You encouraged, you blessed, you stirred by that, you're kind of like, yes, that's great, what a great word. You know, but this is what I love about the Bible is because you've got to wrestle with scriptures like that. And Paul and James is not just trying to have a crack at them. He's saying, guys, there's a better way to live than the way that you've been living. He says, you're living, and he says, you've done three things wrong. He says, you've had more than you needed, you haven't been just with it, and you've used it for self-indulgence. And he said, that's not the way Jesus wants you to live. He says, here's God's way. God says, you're blessed to be a blessing. Yeah, true. And then Abraham, many of you would know the story of Abraham in the Old Testament. In Genesis chapter 12, it speaks about Abraham. And God gives him a promise and says, Abraham, he says, I'm going to make you into a great nation. I'm going to bless you. I'm going to make your name great, Abraham. And you're going to be a blessing. And I'm going to bless those who bless you. And whoever curses you, I'll curse. And all people on earth will be blessed by you. And then if you flip across to the New Testament in Galatians, in the book of Galatians, it actually says that we, talking about you and I, the church as people, we are those who are actually heirs, a seed, with seed of that same promise that was given to Abraham. So Abraham, the promise, Abraham, you will be blessed so that you can be a blessing. Yeah. Matt, you will be blessed so that you can be a blessing. Insert your name in there. You will be blessed so that you can be a blessing. And if you look at Abraham's life, the way that he lived, he was blessed in every aspect that you can think of, financially, materially, relationally, he was blessed in every way. And there was a sense of like, man, people just by being around him were blessed because he understood that he was just a steward of what that which God had blessed him with. And the way he wanted to live his life was to be a blessing. Not to be a taker, but to be a giver. Not to be those that just kind of say it's all about self-indulgence, but to live another way and to actually understand that actually, hey, God, I want to put you first. And so when we live that way, we begin to live with an eternity perspective, because you can never outgive God. You can never outgive God financially. You can't outgive God in terms of your time, your talents, whatever it may be. You cannot outgive God. God says, I'm going to bless you so that you can be a blessing. That's how you live with an eternity perspective. And then lastly, he says our trials will be temporary. How do we live with an eternal perspective? Understand that our trials are temporary. James 7, 5 verse 7 says, be patient then, brothers and sisters, until the Lord's coming. See how the farmer waits for the land to yield its valuable crop, patiently waiting for autumn and spring rains. You too, be patient and stand firm, because the Lord's coming is near. Don't grumble against one another, brothers and sisters, or you will be judged. The judge is standing at the door. Brothers and sisters, as an example of patience in the face of suffering, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. As you know, we count as blessed those who have persevered. You have heard of Job's perseverance and have seen what the Lord finally brought about. The Lord is full of compassion and mercy. I love that. To live as Christ, to die as gain. We're just passing through this life. We are just a mist. We're going to spend eternity in heaven. So don't give up. Don't despair. Don't think that this is the end of you. Because the reality is that your trials, whatever you may be facing, are just temporary. As I said earlier, Jesus himself said we will go through them. But he also said this, but take heart, because I've overcome the world. Your trial will always be trumped by Jesus. We've got to trust the promise. We've got to trust the process. And you can endure because of eternity. James says, don't allow the enemy to get into your thinking. Don't allow the devil to think that you're too far gone, that there's too much water under the bridge, that you've messed up too badly, that how can God use someone like you, that you've been out of church for too long, that you've maybe never been in a church. Don't believe the lies that the devil will try and tell you, that maybe some of you are even thinking right now, because they're not true. They're just his lies, because he doesn't want you to be living in the freedom and the fullness of what Jesus actually has for you. The reality is that he says, Jesus' word says, you are an overcomer in him. Rather, fight from that position, knowing that you can stand firm and you can fight for your victory in him, knowing that Jesus already purchased it and won it for you. He's already going ahead of you. He is the captain of hosts, and he has already won that victory. And so you can stand no matter what trial comes your way, knowing I can stand firm because I've got my eyes fixed on an eternal destiny. I've got my eyes fixed on an eternal God. I've got my eyes fixed on Jesus, who's coming again. And I see the end from the beginning. How do I know? Because the Bible tells us that we win. We win. Don't believe the lies of the devil that says this thing is going to get you. It doesn't have to. It doesn't need to. It's not his plan for you. His plan is for you to live victorious. Look, there's a beautiful picture of heaven in Revelation chapter 21 and 22. We haven't got time to go look at it, but I'd encourage you to go look, because there's this picture of what is life like in heaven. And listen to some of the things that it says about how we're going to spend eternity. It says there'll be no more death, no more mourning, no more crying, no more pain. Right now, you may be feeling mourning, crying, pain, death knocking at your door. The promise of eternity is that there's no more of those things. Hello? Those are just part of being part of a fallen world. But the Bible says when you have an eternal perspective, you understand, hey, right now I may be going through a trial, but guess how I'm going to spend eternity? My life is just a mist. That little portion of my life is so small in the context of eternity. Why am I focusing so much on that when I have the whole of eternity with no pain, no death, no suffering, no mourning? Yes. Mama Julia, as her body was wrecked by sickness, had a joy that was birthed in having eternal perspective. My life was impacted by spending time with someone like that. I've never faced what she was facing. But I said, God, I'm inspired by that. I want to live that way too. It goes on to say that God will be with us there. It says that everything will be made new. It says it's our guaranteed inheritance as children of God. There's no ifs, there's no maybes, there's no doubt about whether you're going to inherit it. As a child of God, if you've made a decision to follow Jesus Christ, it says it's yours, guaranteed. No temple will be needed there, no church building, because it says the Lord and the Lamb are its temple. So God himself, Jesus, is going to be there, and we're not going to need a building because he's going to be everywhere. There'll be no sun or moon, for the glory of the Lord will give the light. How cool is that? Its gates will always be open. Nothing impure will ever enter it. Only those whose names are in the Lamb's book of life. The river of life will flow down its main street. The trees of life will grow on either side of this river, and it will yield perpetual fruit. And it says that the leaves of that tree will be for the healing of the nations. There'll no longer be any curse. And we'll see his face, and his name will be written on our foreheads, and we will reign with him